May it please the court. My name is Rick Kissinger, attorney registration number 1435, and I have with me at appellant's counsel, Mr. Bobby G. Riley, who appeared with me on brief. I represent SEL, the appellant in this case. This is an appeal from a decision of the Industrial Claim Appeals Office. This case involves, today's the day for old lawyers and apologies, but in any event, I apologize for my voice. I recently had bronchitis and I haven't completely recovered from it, and it's been 3 months, so I don't know if I do. In any event, this case involves a small trucking company, SEL, Inc., located in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and an individual named Michael J. Smith. SEL is a trucking company engaged in the business of transporting shipments in interstate commerce, which are tendered to it by truck brokerage companies. SEL provides its services by subcontracting its loads out to independent contractors whom it engages in under equipment lease agreements. Now, some of these subcontractors operate multiple trucks. Some are what is referred to in the trucking industry vernacular as owner-operator independent contractors. Owner-operator independent contractors are, in essence, one truck owners who operate their own truck by subcontracting that truck to larger trucking companies. The traveling public sees owner-operator independent contractors daily on the highways of our country. There are many here in Colorado. The amicus brief indicates that there may be as many as 500,000 owner-operators around the country. After seeing SEL's website advertising seeking to employ independent contractors, this individual, Mr. Michael J. Smith, contacted SEL in late December 2008, seeking a position with the company. When he was advised that SEL had no employee driver positions at all, and in fact did not employ employee drivers, he indicated an interest in becoming an owner-operator independent contractor for SEL, a business which he had previously been engaged in with another carrier out of Salt Lake City named CR England. Since he did not own a truck of his own at this particular time, he inquired whether SEL had a truck available to sell in a lease purchase to him. After negotiations over a number of weeks, Mr. Smith represented to SEL that he was a sole proprietor and that he wanted to purchase a truck through the lease purchase arrangement from SEL, and that he would thereafter lease the truck back to SEL under the agreement set forth in Exhibit 3 in the record. On December 17, 2008, Mr. Smith became an owner-operator independent contractor for SEL, providing trucking services in interstate commerce. After 3 months, in mid-March 2009, Mr. Smith terminated his relationship with SEL without notice. A few months later, Mr. Smith filed a claim for unemployment insurance with the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment, and that employment insurance application resulted in an investigation and a decision by the Department of Labor and Employment that Mr. Smith was not an independent contractor for SEL, but instead was an employee of SEL.
Mr. Kissinger?
Yes, Your Honor.
How would Mr. Smith be eligible for these benefits if he voluntarily terminated his employment?
Eligible for
unemployment benefits?
Well, that's the point we're trying to make here.
I mean, if he voluntarily quits, how is he eligible? Employee, independent contractor, irrelevant. I mean,
Your Honor, I agree that that's an issue in the case that wasn't addressed at the level of the Department of Labor, and it wasn't addressed again at the appellate levels prior to now.
Well, that's in the unemployment benefits part of the case. That's not in this part of the case, is it?
That's correct.
Okay.
Now, I think there's a debate here about whether he was a worker for SEL or not. That our position is that he wasn't a worker for SEL, and so we weren't in there arguing that he had terminated the relationship and therefore wasn't entitled to benefits.
You just didn't want to pay the taxes.
Well, my client felt it was not obligated to pay the taxes, that the unilateral actions of this individual, Mr. Smith, in deciding that he no longer wanted to be an independent contractor.
Is that in your brief, unilateral actions of Mr. Smith?
I don't think the term unilateral is in my brief.
I was going to say, is that an issue in this case?
No, it's not.
Okay, thank you, counsel. I appreciate your candor. Thank you.
How does this leaseback of the vehicle affect the analysis at all? You say he leases the vehicle to SCL. Why is that done, and does that affect the analysis?
Well, the reason it happens, it's explained pretty well in the amicus curiae brief. The reason this happens in the industry is that there are only so many sources of financing for buying trucks. And they are banks and the normal sources of financing. And then there are companies who want to encourage people to get involved in these independent contractor relationships and will use their own bargaining power to purchase a truck and then lease it to an individual to allow him to go ahead and engage in one of these independent contractor relationships. Does that answer the question?
I'm not exactly sure. I thought the facts in this case were that the defendant owned the vehicle, or not the defendant, that Mr. Smith owned the vehicle.
No, Mr. Smith, in fact, leased the truck from SEL.
All right, so he didn't have
it. He leased it back to SEL.
Okay, that's what got me confused. Okay, so he leases it and then leases it back.
That's correct. The lease that he first did is a lease purchase.
All right.
From SEL. If you understand, it's a financial arrangement in which you can buy the truck.
Okay.
Much like you would go out and lease a car.
I've done that before. Okay. I understand. Okay.
Same type of arrangement.
Okay.
Right now, are these contemporaneous arrangements where he's leasing and leasing back? Is it contemporaneous?
It happened on the exact same date, December 17th.
And after the three-month period of time, who's got the truck?
At the end of the three-month period of time, the testimony was that Mr. Smith brought the truck back to Colorado Springs, parked it on a street nearby, called SEL's phone and left a message saying that he was terminating the relationship. Okay, after the application was filed with the Department of Labor, the decision was made that he was an employee. SEL appealed that decision. 2 days of hearings were held in October and November of last year. The hearing officer issued her decision on November 9th of last year, finding that Mr. Smith was an employee of SEL, essentially for the same reasons that had been found earlier, because she had concluded from the evidence that Mr. Smith was not customarily engaged in an independent business providing similar service to entities other than SEL. SEL appealed that decision. On May 24th, the Industrial Claims Appeals Office affirmed the hearing officer's decision and concluded, for the same reasons, that Mr. Smith was an employee and not an independent contractor. SEL immediately filed the appeal that you're hearing today. Now, we raised 5 points in the appellate brief, and they were thoroughly briefed. So, and because of the limited time that I have here today, I want to focus on two particular areas of those points. And so I won't belabor all 5 points in my remaining 7 minutes or so. This case involves seemingly conflicting state and federal policies and seemingly conflicting laws. We respectfully submit that these policies and laws can be harmonized without requiring a result which overrides the clear intent of the parties to establish this contractual arrangement involving an independent contractor. A federal safety policy mandates that SEL maintain exclusive possession, control, and use of Mr. Smith's equipment. That's 49 CFR 376.12. While that equipment is operated under his contract with SEL and under SEL's permits from the federal government.
Doesn't that provision also go on to say that we don't intimate one way or the other whether or not this is an independent contractor relationship?
That's correct. And I believe the whole purpose of the rulemaking indicated that the federal government did not want to get involved in the question of whether the person was an independent contractor or an employee. And whether he was an independent contractor or an employee, it's still the law that exclusive possession and control has to be maintained by the carrier. That's for purposes of protecting the public on the highway. Simultaneously to this requirement, the manner in which the ICAO construes CRS 870.115 requires that Mr. Smith provide services similar to those provided to SEL to other people or entities at the same time in order to be found to be engaged in an independent business. These two positions obviously conflict. In point of fact, the hearing officer.
Wait a minute. Do they conflict? I thought the regulation said your truck has to be devoted to SEL. I didn't think it said you have to be devoted to SEL.
That's correct. But in practical fact, if you have a truck and you make the decision, as Mr. Smith did, to drive that specific truck, now you're the one person on that one truck, and you've made the decision, which ironically has the effect, if the ICAO's decision is upheld, it ironically has the effect of imposing tax liability on SDL because of what Mr. Smith decided to do. In other words, he could have hired a driver for his truck, but he didn't. He decided to drive it himself.
Mr. Kissinger, we have different tests for independent contractor employee that apply in different circumstances. We have a test that we apply in the workers' compensation context, which is different than the test we might apply in the tort liability context. That might be different than the test we apply in this particular context. So what, you know, just because you're an independent contractor in one doesn't mean you are in another context, but it seems to me your argument is, if you're an independent contractor for one purpose, you're an independent contractor for all purposes.
No, my argument is that there ought to be a special recognition of the fact that this federal requirement exists and that it should be disregarded when you're considering whether someone is an independent contractor for either of the purposes, whether it be workers' comp or unemployment insurance. In this case, unemployment insurance, of course. Construing the statutes and federal laws and the state and federal policies to be in conflict with one another on these various points is unnecessary from our perspective. This court has determined in the Longview Systems case cited in our brief that there are circumstances in different cases which can lead to the need to look at factors other than the fact that the so-called worker did not provide similar services to others at the same time he was providing services for the putative employer.
Well, you're not saying that the court or the hearing officer didn't, or the panel didn't consider other factors, are you? You're not saying they decided it solely on this issue alone.
I am saying that they decided primarily, if not solely, and I can't read the minds of the decision makers, but if you look at the decision itself, it appears that the primary reason for this finding was the exclusive control and possession of the vehicle.
I had thought he went on to say there's no business card, there's no business, there's no this, there's no that. I thought there were other factors he alluded to.
There were other findings, but it appears to me in reading the two decisions that the primary problem in this case was that the exclusive use of the vehicle requirement in federal law was keeping Mr. Smith from being able to take his truck and go somewhere else, for example.
And I know your time's running out. I want to ask you a question. I've caused your time to run out. I understand that. But you also cite to the statute 4011.5102. You cite a provision there suggesting that, again, it's either exclusive use of the vehicle or exclusive use of the worker can be consistent with independent contractor status. Is it your position that that somehow authorizes an independent contractor to do that, as opposed, you know, is it your position that that statute authorizes independent contractors to have that exclusivity?
No, it's our position that in the trucking company, we have a unique set of circumstances. We have one where here's a sole proprietor who owns a truck, and he leases it to a company. He's required by federal law to provide that truck exclusively for work in interstate commerce, exclusively to that particular company to work. We feel that the state of Colorado, and in particular here the ICAO, should recognize that that's a mandated requirement by federal law, and they should disregard that exclusive possession and then take a look at all the other circumstances surrounding the relationship to determine. And we've listed in the brief and in other places, we've listed a number of the factors. The Longview case has a lot of factors and so on that should be considered, and make a determination that Mr. Smith was in fact an independent contractor.
Did you argue before the hearing officer or panel that certain factors were not considered that should have been considered?
We argued, well, we felt that we put on the evidence of all these other factors. We didn't have a chance to present any argument. The one point that I haven't been able to get to, and I have about 29 seconds to get to it, we feel that Mr. Smith was clearly a sole proprietor in this case. He said he was the sole proprietor. My client, SCL, said that in the interview, he said he was a sole proprietor, held himself as a sole proprietor. He either owned or leased all his business assets. He had the risk of loss or profit from his business, and he engaged in the business independently. They never even saw him after he was originally leased. Thank you.
You just give me permission to ask you a question, counsel. Isn't the evidence disputed on that issue? Didn't Mr. Smith say, no, I don't have my own business?
Well, I think he answered in question of the Department of Labor's representative whether he had his own business. He did answer that question that, no, I don't have my own business. And I don't know whether the frame of reference was at that point in time or back when he was driving the truck. I believe that he was asking him, and right then he said, no, I don't have my own business.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Katie Allison, attorney registration number 39430, appearing on behalf of the Industrial Claim Appeals Office. Your Honors, SCL did not meet its burden of proving that the claimant was an independent contractor. First, the burden is on SCL to prove that the claimant was an independent contractor. Second, the statute requires that the worker be customarily engaged in an independent business in order to be an independent contractor. The claimant was not. Third, the trucking regulations that SCL relies upon does not support a finding that a person who works exclusively for a company for an indefinite period of time can be an independent contractor for unemployment purposes. I will first address the reasons why the claimant is presumed
to make that third point again.
Sure.
I think I may have missed it.
The trucking regulations that SZL relies upon do not support a finding that a person who works exclusively for a company for an indefinite period of time can be an independent contractor for unemployment purposes.
On the last point, it seems to me the argument is that while it may not expressly require it, the reason he wasn't working for somebody else was because federal law prohibited it. So why should that count against the trucking company? It can't allow him to work for others. He has no control over that.
Sure. As far as the federal law, the 49 CFR 376 is what SZL has cited, and SZL. First of all, I think Judge Daly correctly pointed out that this provision focuses on the truck, not on whether or not the person himself was engaged in an independent business. And in this case, the panel determined that the control part of the statute is not at play here. So we're only talking about the independent business. And I really don't think that 49 CFR 376 has any play on whether or not the worker was engaged in an independent business. And I cited in my brief the Western Ports case, which was out of Washington because I didn't find anything super relevant in Colorado. And basically, kind of what I see in a lot of SZL's arguments is that it's a different policy. The policy behind the federal regulations and the policy behind the Workers' Compensation Act, when it's referring to 11.5102, they're different than the unemployment policy. And the unemployment policy, if I can find it here for a second, the purpose of the requirement that a worker be customarily engaged in an independent business for unemployment purposes is to protect the security of workers who receive substantially all of their assets from one employer. Does that answer your question?
Sure. It kind of begs the question. Uses the term employer. I mean, we have to determine whether there's an employer-employee relationship. So yes, certainly if there's an employer-employee relationship, I can see that, but isn't that the question we have to ask?
Right, absolutely, that's the question we're asking, but I think the problem here is that you see that the claimant only worked for SZL.
Well, could he have worked for anybody else?
I think he could have.
All right, just with another truck.
Right.
And the truck in this case really was SZL's truck.
Right, the lease back, whatever. It was SZL's truck. He was paying for the truck at $550 a month or something. And I was going to say something else on that point. Oh, also, if you look at the Longview case, which SZL talked about, Longview discusses that you can work for one employer for a short amount of time specified in a contract. And first of all, the contract here was indefinite. It was a 12-month contract period, but that could be extended for a year automatically. So it was essentially indefinite.
Do you agree that the hearing officer focused solely on that one factor?
No, I do not. And I.
And so what are the other factors that it relied on?
Okay. If you look through the factors in 870.115, I think one of the primary factors to look at is whether the business operations were combined. The work the claimant performed for SZL was completely combined with SZL's business operations. The claimant performed over-the-road truck driving, which is the exact service that SZL provides. It's sort of like if you look at a web designer who comes in and say the web designer was creating a website for SZL. The web designer submits a bid, wins the bid. He comes in, he performs a completely different business than SZL provides, creates a website, and then he proceeds to the next company where he creates another website. That's not the case here. The claimant, SZL advertises for its workers as drivers. That's its whole website. And then the drivers perform the exact service that SZL provides.
Let me ask you this. SZL was advertising for drivers who would lease trucks from them. Is that correct? They weren't advertising for owner-operators. They were advertising for drivers that would lease trucks from them.
Right, exactly. There are other factors that I think the hearing officer and the panel reviewed. The Longview case says that to be customarily engaged in an independent business, a person must actually be engaged in a separate business that would survive the termination of the relationship. And here, immediately prior to his work with SZL, the claimant was in an employment relationship. And he did not work, as we've said, for anybody while he worked for SZL. And then he has not done any work on his own since he quit working for SZL. He was not.
Did the hearing officer make a finding of that? He hadn't worked for anybody since SZL?
I can check.
Say.
There, too.
I'm not sure that he did, but I can point in the transcript to where he said that he has not worked for anybody since he worked for SZL.
Is that disputed?
I don't believe it was.
Even assuming that's the case, I mean, that's something totally within his control. SZL doesn't have any ability to control that, so he could simply say, I'm not going to work for anybody else, so now you've got to pay unemployment taxes.
Right, that's absolutely true. I do think in this case it would have been very difficult for him to look for work with somebody else when he didn't own a truck and his alleged business was a trucking service.
Why is that? He got the job with SZL. I mean, couldn't he go to somebody else who did things like SZL?
That's true, although I don't believe that his job with SZL was an employment relationship.
I understand that, putting that aside. I mean, right. but I don't see why he couldn't have tried to work in the same industry under the same sort of relationship with somebody else. I mean, he may have tried for all we know, he just wasn't able to. But it doesn't seem like anything SZL did prohibited him from doing that once he left SZL.
Right, although I do think that the sort of nature of SCL's business was not one in which the claimant had the ability to have a business that would survive the termination of his employment with SCL.
Well, that makes me wonder how he got the job with SCL in the first place. I mean, he's in the same position now he was before he got a job with SCL, and yet he got a job with SCL.
Right, which goes back to what I'm arguing here, is that I think he's employed by SCL. I think he got an employment position with SCL, not an independent. I don't think he was engaged in an independent business.
So what was the evidence then as to whether he is a truck driver or not? I mean, I guess I'm getting confused here. It seems to me he is a truck driver, and he got a job with SCL, however you want to characterize that relationship. So in that sense, he's engaged in a business or a career, isn't he, if he's a truck driver?
He's been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand that. But I don't think that, I mean, I've been an attorney for not 10 years, but I'm not engaged in an independent business as an attorney. I'm employed by the state. I don't think that someone who's been working in a business for 10 years is necessarily an independent contractor.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Just to follow up hypothetically, what if he had gone out and worked for somebody else? Okay, right after he quits SCL, he goes out and works for somebody else as a truck driver. Does that mean he's now engaged in an independent business because he does this from time to time and keeps going from company to company?
I don't think, certainly not necessarily. The surviving of having a business that would survive the termination of his work with SCL is not the only factor to look at, and it's like I said, an independent contractor business. So being employed by other workers or other employers does not satisfy that factor either. And there's another factor that I think Judge Daly mentioned, and that is just the Longview case talks about the fact that a claimant needs to have the things that a business should have in order to be customarily engaged in an independent business. A business name, business cards, business listing, business telephone number, business address, any sort of advertising.
Hearing officer, rely on those.
Hearing officer said he performed the work in the name of SZL, so he didn't perform work. He said the worker does not have his own business name. Sorry, she said that.
Let me ask you another question, counsel. There was a finding by the hearing officer that under the lease agreement, the worker could only do work for SZL. Does the lease agreement have a provision not only about the use of the truck, but about the worker's work? Was that an erroneous finding by the hearing officer?
I actually don't believe that the lease agreement says that the claimant can only work for SCL, only the truck. But the claimant did say that in his testimony.
The claimant did say that?
I believe.
Is the lease agreement in the record?
The lease agreement was one of the exhibits.
Okay.
And the claimant said on page 377 that he was not allowed to perform work for anybody else while he was working for SCL. I've mentioned that the contract period was indefinite. There was also no fixed contract fee because it was an indefinite contract period. He was paid 87 cents per mile, which is quite similar to an hourly rate. He also performed services under SZL's name, and he was told to say that he was a driver of SZL when he went to these other businesses. And I have to come back to the fact, because I think it does come into play here, despite the federal regulations, that he was required to work exclusively for SZL. And I would like to discuss...
He was required to work exclusively? Oh, for the evidence we just talked about a minute ago?
Right. I'm not sure we've touched on the statute 40 11.5102, which is a utility statute in the Colorado Revised Statute. And the statute says that a lease may provide that an independent contractor only work for a contract carrier as a driver during the time the independent contractor is operating a motor vehicle pursuant to the lease. SZL believes that this lease statute is an exception to the customarily engaged provision And I would disagree. I think that this statute does not apply and should not apply to the Employment Security Act. The purpose of this requirement that the workers be customarily engaged is to protect the security of workers who receive substantially all of their assets from one employer. As I've said, this purpose is entirely different than the purpose of the Workers' Compensation Act.
I didn't catch their argument to say it suggests that that provision creates an exception to the employment rule. I thought they were saying basically is under this provision, you can't rely solely or primarily on such a circumstance.
I think you're right. I think I misspoke in saying exception. I think they basically say it preempts the Employment Security Act. This court has found that the lease statute does apply to workers' compensation cases, and that makes sense. The lease statute directly addresses a workers' compensation case, or the Workers' Compensation Act, and in turn, the Workers' Compensation Act directly addresses the lease statute.
Also, does that provision have any independent significance absent all the other provisions that lead to a presumption of independent contractor status?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Well, if you look at all those little parts of that statute, they talk about different parts that independent contractors can do in a lease. Mm-hmm. And then under subsection 4, I think it is, said, if all of these are met, there's a rebuttable presumption of an independent contractor status. So the question I have of you is that, do they have any independent significance apart from contributing to this presumption?
I think that's a good argument. It's possible that they don't.
Not arguing. I don't think.
I'll go ahead and regurgitate what you said to me and use it as an argument then. But I don't think.
Fidgeting.
Sorry. I don't think that I just don't think that the whole thing at all applies to the Unemployment Act. Thank you.
Mr. Kissinger?
I don't think I reserved any time. Happy to respond. So.
Questions? Yes, sir. I'm asking.
Oh, Mr. Kissinger. I have one question. I would like to give you the opportunity to answer the same question I just gave opposing counsel. The provision that you cited about basically in a lease, an independent contractor can devote either all his work or his truck or property to the motor carrier. Does that have any independent significance, or is it only important as far as contributing to this presumption that is in 4011.5.1024 or something?
Well, I think I can't answer it exactly as you posed it, I don't think, because I do think it has some independent significance, but I think it also is a contributing factor to the whole conclusion regarding the statute. That statute and two other statutes, one in the workers' comp area and one in the unemployment insurance area, all three say that if there is some mandate of law, such as the one on exclusive possession and control, that it should be ignored when considering whether an entity is an independent contractor or not.
Thank you, counsel. I think you've answered. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Counsel, for your arguments, case stands submitted. We'll issue an opinion in due course.